From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection will be made this hour over the next several months during what is being called the dark pandemic winter. While vaccines are on the horizon, we're still looking at several months of restrictions on gatherings, cold weather, perhaps Zoom fatigue. So what are some new ways to find happiness, or at least peace, during this difficult time? Writing for Scientific American last week, Melinda Wenner-Moyer presented tips from disaster psychology that she says can help people cope during times of crisis. Among them are mindfulness and finding new ways to connect with family and friends. She says those may be able to address some of the anxiety researchers are seeing among the general population during the pandemic. In her piece, she shares research from the CDC when more than 25% of people in June surveyed said they had symptoms of anxiety. More than 24% said they had symptoms of depression. That is a threefold and fourfold increase from the year before. Whew. This hour, our guests help us explore strategies to help us get through the pandemic winter. Strategies including mindfulness, meditation, self-care. They also discuss the connection between physical and mental health and why it can be important to care for both. I'd like to welcome our guests for the hour. Dr. Aaron Olden is a physician and owner of Mindful Medicine Rochester. Dr. Olden, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome to Alana Cahoon, who is a creative coach and author of Mindfulness, Mantras, and Meditations, 55 Inspirational Practices to Soothe the Body, Mind, and Soul. Alana, welcome.
Thank you, Evan. Pleasure to be here.
And Jim Allen, Associate Professor of Psychology at SUNY Geneseo and author of The Psychology of Happiness in the Modern World. Jim, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for the opportunity, Evan.
There's a lot I want to talk about here, and I want to mention at the outset that for listeners who've gone through the last month or so and really found it to be a grind, I'll just share that, you know, I mean, probably 5 weeks ago, I thought, well, you know, it's going to be tough. I'm not going to go see my mom and dad. I'm not going to go home for the holidays. We're going to try to find a way to do it. Talk to friends who are sort of in the same spot. And the closer these holidays got, the more, especially older adults and families, were really hurting with the isolation, the disconnection. And I heard multiple families make compromises and even get together in ways they didn't expect to or didn't even feel necessarily like maybe they should have. But it was like, it was a strategy to say, look, I can't let a person in my family break down. I love you. I want to be there. Dr. Deborah Birx, who we all saw up there with Fauci and the president for many months, the New York Post ran a piece sort of attacking her for going home to be with her 90-year-old mother on Thanksgiving. And Dr. Birx said, yes, I did, after one of my siblings told me she had stopped eating and drinking and was falling apart. So she said that became the compromise. We can't let people fall apart. So there's a lot of pain. And I want to ask all of you just for some of your opening observations about where we are and, you know, sort of how you see us taking care of ourselves and one another. Dr. Olden, what are you experiencing?
Well, thanks again for having me, Evan.
Sure.
You know, I think you've really hit it on the head. Seeing this daily in my practice, I think, you know, it started with some of the, you know, disappointment of clients of mine at having to cancel weddings and having to cancel get-togethers, you know, back in the spring and in the summer. And then as the holidays approached, you know, concern about whether we should see family members, to, you know, the stress about I need to get tested, but I can't find a place to get tested. And I agree with you. I mean, it's a challenge. It's been a challenge for everybody, you know, including myself. And I think each of us has to sort of wade through this difficult time and figure out how do we maintain those connections, because those connections are often what keep us going.
Hmm. Alana, what have you seen?
Well, what I'm seeing is a different attitude in how to approach this pandemic. And so I think we need to respect everyone's choice. And so some people are going to stay home and they are going to seclude themselves and they're going to, you know, take care of themselves as best they can and manage their anxiety and stress through the means that they can learn about, while others are still going to not only visit with their 90-year-olds, but have their friends over. And what I'm seeing more and more is that's happening with singles. And the threat of loneliness is, especially with people who don't have a partner, or a significant other, is paramount right now. And so who am I to judge and say, don't get together, you know? On the other side of the coin, there's so many people who have underlying circumstances who make this situation even a little bit more of a challenge and scary to them. And so we need to try to move ahead with our own choice and respect for each other.
Professor Allen, what about you? What are you seeing?
Yeah, thank you. I think there's three things right off the bat. One is I'm glad that you've recognized the importance of social relationships. And my reading of the literature is if there's one single factor that's important for happiness, it's social relationships probably matter more than anything. One of the potential bright spots, though, is that the quality of the relationship matters a lot more than the quantity of the relationship. And there is the problem with relatives that live geographically distant from us and so forth, and certainly a need to get to be with them and share the holidays with them. But on the other hand, in terms of our own personal happiness, I think there's a lot of value in if we can, and the previous guest, you know, talked about singles, but if we can try to cocoon with people within our pod and cherish those relationships and strengthen them, because those are usually the people that are the closest to us and that mean the most to us emotionally. And those are the people that are going to make us happiest. Certainly there are problems with people that are single and so forth, but, you know, cherishing those relationships that are within our COVID pod are just really important, I think. Mm-hmm. And then real quickly, two other points. There's a traditional positive psychology approach to happiness and things like cultivating gratitude and kindness and positive emotions and so forth. And that's certainly something that everyone can do to try to make themselves happier. There's also a socio-structural approach to happiness that I think is often misunderstood and is particularly important during the current COVID plague. Factors like income inequality and unregulated or underregulated advertising, materialistic, consumeristic kinds of culture, and the very nature of the type of capitalism that we practice in this country, in the United States, also limits our happiness in ways that have a lot of relevance to the pandemic that we're going through right now. And this third approach is a long-term kind of approach. It's not a quick fix, but we do have to start working on the future at some point. And I think it's really important maybe to start thinking about this, and lots of details about all three categories I'm looking forward to exploring.
Well, I want to let our listeners know that our guests all have, well, two of our three guests have a book to talk about, and Dr. Olden's got an event coming up. I'm going to ask him to talk about that in a moment. And I would love to hear from listeners about how you're trying to cope and how you're working with family and loved ones and friends. And maybe if you've hit some hard times with that, or if you've found coping mechanisms, feel free to let us know. You can email the program, connections@wxxi.org. If you want to call the program, it's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Professor Allen's book is The Psychology of Happiness in the Modern World. Alana's book is called Mindfulness, Mantras, and Meditations, 55 Inspirational Practices to Soothe the Mind, Body, and Soul. And I'm going to read from that in just a moment. But Dr. Olden, you also have something coming up here. Tell us a little bit about what's coming up.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for asking. So I put together a program actually for one of my clients back over the summer who was really struggling with how it, just sort of emotionally the pandemic was hitting her and the stress that she was feeling. And this particular individual was being kind of encouraged to start an antidepressant. And I think that decision is an individual one for anyone, but particularly for her, this was something that she didn't want to do. But she was really interested in mindfulness. And so I put together a program that explored how to integrate mindfulness, you know, into your life to support your health, to manage, you know, perhaps symptoms of anxiety and depression, and kind of just give folks a toolbox for, you know, for self-care. And this particular individual went on to kind of emerge from this depression, made new connections, actually started her own business. And, you know, it was really exciting that it worked for her. And of course, everyone's situation is different, but I wanted to create sort of a virtual course for folks to experiment with different techniques of mindfulness, whether it might be breath work or meditation or simply, you know, maybe a walking mindfulness approach. So I put together a 6-week online course that'll be starting up next week, and folks can learn more about that on my website. But really, you know, again, I created it out of just honestly my desire to help people, you know, manage difficult situations in a mindful way.
What's the website, Doctor?
So folks can head to my website, which is mindfulmed.com.
Mindfulmed.com. How do you define mindfulness?
Yeah, great question. You know, I think that folks sometimes confuse you know, think of mindfulness as just meditation, you know, the practice of meditation. But my favorite definition comes from someone named Jon Kabat-Zinn, who has written some books and done a lot of teaching throughout the world on this. And he describes mindfulness as really the awareness that arises through paying attention on purpose in the present moment and non-judgmentally. And it's a lot to unpack, but basically, you know, the essence of it is bringing a presence and an awareness to whatever we're doing, you know, whether it's being with family, being mindful about that, whether it's eating, you know, eating in a mindful way, not sitting in front of the television, but really paying attention to our loved ones that are across the table from us, a mindfulness and awareness of our breath. So, you know, that just to kind of go back to the idea of experimenting with different techniques of mindfulness, you know, I try to encourage people to find mindful activities, you know, that work for them. So again, you know, it's not just meditation. There are many ways to incorporate mindfulness into our lives.
Alana, the word mindfulness is right there in the title of your book, and I'd love for you to talk a little bit about how you define mindfulness and whether it takes practice for people who haven't been thinking about it for many years.
Right. Yeah. So first of all, I love the description that I just heard and appreciate that. And for me, meditation is what you do on the cushion, and meditation and mindfulness is taking that out into your daily life. So what I mean by that is when we meditate, usually we sit in silence and we quiet our mind. We quiet our emotions. We quiet our body. It's about being in this stillness, right? Which we all need. And in that stillness, we are then able to be fully present, right? So then by practicing that on a regular basis, whether it's 1 minute every morning after you brush your teeth or 20 minutes every day. And then throughout your day, taking that 1 minute of pausing, stopping, taking a breath in and a breath out, and just looking and seeing what's around you, listening and hearing the sounds, being fully present and honoring the gift of life. That's mindfulness. And this pandemic actually is a gift if you're able to look past the challenge or even embrace the challenge and say, okay, I'm up for this. What does this mean? You know, it means appreciating the gift of life, of being fully in your body, and then to another point, to maybe not engage so much in the world of consumerism, but coming back to the family. Everyone is with their family now, their loved ones. And so mindfulness for me is really cherishing the moment, being fully present, not pushing away the challenges of life. Maybe embracing is too drastic of a measure, but seeing, recognizing them.
No, I take that point. In fact, in a moment here, after I grab a phone call, I understand the distinction you're making. You're not necessarily embracing, or, you know, a pandemic is hard to embrace, but your book is almost written for the pandemic. There's sections on loss, you know, pain, sorrow, but also on gratitude, which we're going to get to. I think gratitude is big for happiness. And I don't know, Professor Allen, I mean, I'm hearing great definitions of mindfulness. I've spent a whole lot of the pandemic just doom scrolling social media. I don't think that's mindfulness. Yeah. How do I get out of that, Professor?
Well, I'm going to give a longer term answer. But again, we've got to start working on the future at some point. And nothing I'm saying is a criticism of mindfulness or the positive psychology, individualistic approaches. I think they're really important. And I try to practice mindfulness myself. I try to teach it to my children. I think it's vitally important. But one of the things that's missing, I think, sometimes is that the structure of our culture is built to discourage us from doing things like practicing gratitude and practicing mindfulness. And that structure of the culture with materialistic, consumeristic kind of society that breeds income inequality and so forth promotes so much competition and so much lack of trust with each other and ourselves that it makes it hard to establish really good social relationships. And it also makes it hard for us to feel gratitude and to feel mindfulness. These things also have direct influences on happiness. There's a lot of data on social indicators like suicide rates, child abuse rates, mental illness rates, imprisonment rates, teenage pregnancies, and so forth. They're all linked to these culture-level variables that make us less happy. So while I encourage people to continue thinking about mindfulness and individualistic approaches, I think it's also important that we think about things in our culture that make it hard for us to practice those things and that make us unhappy, and that we recognize that these things are particularly a problem during a pandemic, and that there are going to be more pandemics in the future. The people that study this pandemic are suggesting that, you know, this is maybe only the first one that's going to come along. So unless we fix these cultural things, we're going to be really handicapped, I think. Mm.
Let me get Jane in Rochester on the phone. Go ahead, Jane.
Well, this is perfect, given the lead-in that I just had. I think there are two elements that are missing in the conversation so far. I should preface it with that I've been a Buddhist meditator for 45 years. It's an important part of my everyday life, and I'm part of a Buddhist community locally, Dharma Sangha. And the two pieces that I think are missing are being part of a community that practices together and altruism. Mathieu Ricard, R-I-C-A-R-D, is a scientist, was a translator for the Dalai Lama, a longtime meditator, and he's written a couple of books, one on happiness and one on altruism, as well as many, many other books. He's called the happiest man alive. He's been measured by scientists. It's kind of cute, actually, the way they've used him as a model. One of his themes is the importance of altruism, and that is the way that we find joy in our life. And I have found that to be so true during COVID. If I start to dip, all I have to do is look at who's out there that I know that needs something, and it's everything from hooking my sister in California who was depressed up with a preteen here in Rochester who needed someone to read with her because she's not reading well enough, somebody who needs rides somewhere, somebody who needs a phone call to cheer them up. We have a little free library out front, and every time that I do something with our little free library, it brings joy to my heart. And through that combination of mindfulness and meditating every day and doing these small acts of kindness to others, I feel like I have really been thriving. And the other thing that's really important for me is being part of a community of like-minded people so that I'm not just meditating alone. Even though my meditation community can't get together in person, we meditate together on Wednesday evenings and on Saturday mornings, and we have talks on Wednesday evenings so that we feel really connected. And if we hear that somebody has a big need, like a woman injured both of her wrists and she has three kids and her husband is working and she can't work, so they're, you know, their income is limited. Well, we got a whole bunch of people together and are providing them with meals, are covering the costs of some house cleanings for her. There's a zillion ways we can bring joy to other people and do it with community. So I really want to stress both of those as ways to help people. If you're just trying to do it by yourself, with yourself, that's not enough. It's not going to get you there. Thank you.
A lot of beautiful stuff there, Jane. Thank you for that. Let me ask all of our guests. I'll start with Professor Allen. What do you think?
Yeah, thank you for bringing up that point. I think it's vitally important. There's relatively new research on kindness. It's in the literature. It's not usually referred to as altruism, but kindness. And being kind helps us be happier. And there's a real rich, detailed prescription about how to be kind, whether to do it all in one day or spread it out over a week, you know, and so forth. Really interesting research there. But one of the other interesting things about that is that there's emerging research about kindness helping the happiness of those around us. And I'm really excited about that research because usually when people talk about the psychology of happiness, it's how to make ourselves happier. The kindness literature is beginning to show how we can spread happiness to other people around us. When we're kind to other people, empirically, it makes them happier too. And I think that's one of the things that the caller was mentioning, that that's very true empirically, very important.
Hmm. Alana, what do you make of that phone call?
I think it's lovely. You know, I practice Buddhism myself, but I come from a Christian roots. And I understand the value of community, and Professor Allen so wisely talked about the importance of that, especially now. So yes, reaching out, connecting to others is very important. But for me, I think I was raised this way by my mother, that religion is a separate issue, and that what I would love to bring to all people is the wisdom of prayer, meditation, mindfulness. And it doesn't have to even have those words. It's simply a way of being, the acupuncturist. He mentioned how, learning tools throughout the day that, you know, bringing your awareness to the present moment and being around like-minded people, yes, definitely that helps. So, I think being of service to others, when anyone, you know, is happy around you, you get happy. It's kind of a contagious thing. Being grateful, we talked about gratitude as well. Being grateful for just being able to have friends that you can call and talk to. Having people like you running, you know, organizations, radio shows to help people and broadcast. So I think community is huge. Family is really important right now. And bringing the ability to be mindful in a non-secular way. Hmm. I think I said that right.
Dr. Olden, you want to add to that?
Yeah, I'd love to. I think that... you know, I agree with everything that's been said, and I would say that, you know, we could take a both and approach rather than an either or approach, right? So what I think the point that I'm trying to make is mindfulness, the process of really getting to know yourself and figuring out what techniques work for you. Some folks are really energized by being around others and being in a community, and I think we have a wonderful community of fellow meditators and so forth. I did a yoga teacher training over at the Zen Center many years ago, and I probably wouldn't be where I am right now if I hadn't done that. And I agree with the professor. You know, it says, you know, he had said that we really do need to look forward. And I would sort of, in a way, echo that, because I think this pandemic will pass, but stress is really an inevitable part of life. It's part of being human. And, you know, it's been defined as the body's reaction to any change that requires us to adjust. But if we can channel mindfulness, we can really sort of embody that the spirit of, you know, life is 10% what happens to you and 90% how you react to it. And forget about the percentages there. But really, you know, what we're trying to encourage people to do is develop a level of resilience, you know, focus on the things that we can control, because stress is not going away. In primary care, some studies have shown that 60 to 80% of visits to primary care doctors could have a stress-related component. So when the pandemic clears, when we get through this, you know, stress is still going to be there. So I think we're all trying to help people focus on what are the techniques that they can channel to work forward, to work through these things and bring a presence and bring a healing nature to what they're going through.
Talking about a range of emotions that everyone experiences, but in particular heightened by the pandemic. The CDC reports a threefold increase of anxiety, a fourfold increase of reported symptoms of depression among Americans. That's going back to the summer, and certainly over the winter, this is becoming more difficult because, yes, there are vaccines on the horizon, but there is also much more of a limitation on what we can do with one another. And so those challenges are manifesting in different ways, and our guests are here to help us. You just heard Dr. Aaron Olden, a physician and owner of Mindful Medicine Rochester. Jim Allen is an associate professor of psychology at SUNY Geneseo and author of The Psychology of Happiness in the Modern World. Alana Cahoon is a creative coach and author of Mindfulness, Mantras, and Meditations, 55 Inspirational Practices to Soothe the Body, Mind, and Soul. After our only break, I'm going to read a little bit from Alana's book, and we're going to talk about a concept that I confess I found sort of profound. As a way of a preview, on New Year's Eve this week, we're doing our annual show of Rochester's favorite books. And I had a conversation this morning with a gentleman who read a book in which a theme came up of suffering. And the idea is that suffering is what happens when things are not as we wish them to be. And it sounds so simple, maybe even trite, but then you kind of get your head around that and you see it everywhere. You know, you go to, you swing through a coffee place and they're out of what you want. And does that bother you for a second or are you upset for the next hour? You're a sports fan. Your team doesn't win. Are you bummed out or does it ruin your week? I mean, and then look at loss. Look at the pandemic. Look at not being able to be home for a holiday. Look at actually losing people. I'm not certainly saying that we should just accept everything or that we shouldn't push back against things that don't work for us. But that concept was really, really strong for me. And when we come back here, we're going to talk a little bit about how to find gratitude even in hard times and the benefits of taking sort of a really intentional approach to not being consumed when things aren't going exactly as we want, no matter what the circumstances are. So let's take that break and we'll come right back and do that on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, a remarkable year in the housing market. Prices for housing in Rochester and in the surrounding area are still on fire. Even the pandemic hasn't really slowed things down. How is that? We'll talk about it. And in a year in sports in which we almost didn't have sports, some argued that we shouldn't have sports, but then we wouldn't have the Bills. The strange emotions that come with that, we'll dissect it Wednesday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So in Alana Cahoon's book, there are a number of sections on subjects that feel like they pertain directly to this pandemic. And I want to talk a little bit about gratitude and about the concept of feeling thankful when things are really, really hard. So let me just go ahead and read from Alana's book on gratitude as mindfulness. Quote, gratitude is one of the simplest forms of mindfulness. Maybe in its simplicity, it is often missed. We grow accustomed to the way things are and simply expect them to continue. But this is not always so. Life has a way of shaking things up. Have you noticed? Just when things are really looking up. A detour here, a detour there. Gratitude helps you to stay on track, to appreciate when life is moving along at a steady hum, when your meals are prepared and served and easily digested. It also helps you to see the glass half full. Thankfulness is especially helpful during times of stress. I mean, Alana, yes, detours this whole year. It's like, I don't know when you wrote that, but yes, that is exactly what we've sort of all gone through. And there have been, I'm sure, many times where listeners, myself included, have thought, I mean, I don't know how you feel that sense of gratitude when you're so frustrated or hurting. How do you apply it to the events of this year?
Yeah, so I wrote it before the pandemic. You know, it's common. We are let down all the time. The pandemic is like a huge letdown, right? It's definitely a crisis where the rug has been pulled out from under your feet in every single one of us across the entire globe. So I suppose in a strange way, we could just start right there and be thankful that it's not only me, right? This isn't happening to me. This is happening to everyone. And you can use that same theory in just about anything, really, that happens in your life. There's a beautiful mindfulness technique where, let's say you're experiencing a crisis, we'll move away from the pandemic, but it will apply. Let's say you lose your job and you're devastated. You don't know what to do. You didn't expect it. Lord knows enough people have experienced this during the pandemic. And so, again, instead of running from it, instead of, repressing the feelings or taking medications, but to look it straight in the eye, again, maybe not embracing it, but seeing it as what it is, breathing into it. Okay, here it is. And almost like, and I use this later on in the book, almost giving it a name, personifying this feeling. This is a job loss. This is a lousy experience. I'm going to call it a name. This guy's name is Chuck, and I don't like him. What am I going to do about him? Well, you can't throw him away because it's real. So you start to count your blessings. Count your blessings. And ways of doing that, when you start thinking about the good stuff, then you realize things are not as bad. You have all the skills, all the experience, all the savings one can hope, you know, and then you use that to support you in facing and living through the challenge, living through it. You know, you don't have to live with it necessarily, but move through it with grace. So, that's one. I talk about using gratitude to help you sleep at night. And, I don't sleep very well now. This affects all of us. But just saying, oh, thank God my bills are paid. Thank God I have this bed to sleep on and warmth and someone I love. You know, everyone around me at this moment is okay. And therefore, I'm okay. And it goes back to that present moment. Where am I today? You may have lost a job. You may have lost something else. You may be suffering some kind of emotional pain. But right here, right now, you're here. You're alive, you're breathing, which means there is always a way to move through whatever challenge is ahead of you.
If I could kind of go back in my own life, there was a math teacher I had my senior year of high school, and I didn't really learn a lot of math from him, but I really learned a great life lesson. Dwayne Miller, if you're listening out there, just a fabulous person. And my senior year of high school, I had to have a non-open heart surgery, and it meant that I wasn't going to be able to play sports. Not that I was a great athlete, by the way. I was like, just enough to make teams. But I had to, I was losing some of the things that I wanted to do. And when I was going in for the surgery, it was a, for a 17-year-old, it was a scary surgery. There was all kinds of risks. And I remember talking to him. I don't even remember what the circumstances, why I was talking to him before my last day of classes, before I was going to miss like a week of class. And he basically said, "You are really stressed by this." And I said, "Yeah, well, you would be." And he said, "Well, can you control the outcome?" And I said, "Well, no." And he said, "Well, start putting your mind on things that you've got more control over, because you're not going to, they're going to knock you out and you're going to come out on the other end. Hopefully, and things will be fine." And I've never really forgotten that, because I am the kind of person who spends too much time fretting about things I don't have a whole lot of control over. And I think about Dwayne Miller once in a while, and I think about sine and cosine and secant and tangent, and I don't know what any of that stuff means. But I do feel that that lesson from him all these years later stays with me. And it's a little bit of a trigger for me. But I have to say, Alana, I mean, some people, I guess, need different little moments. For me, it's the Dwayne Miller thing. But do people sometimes need to be reminded not to see the rain cloud, if that makes sense, Alana?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's too easy to see the darkness, and especially now. So, you know, again, think of it as a gift to step into your power. Each one of us has the ability to choose life as a gift or not. And I say, choose it as a gift and do your best. You know, the other thing is to have fun. And again, maybe it's easier said than done, but this is a time, you know, for self-reflection. You can't go too far, really. You're kind of stuck with yourself. So what is it that you haven't been doing that fills you, that puts a smile on your face? You know, whether that's drawing or throwing, tossing a ball outside, a sport, an activity, a passion. And so when you find something, an activity especially, that brings you personal joy, just you, and that could be baking, that could be cooking, that could be dancing, now's the time to do it, because we've been given this time, right? Mm.
Well, let me ask our other guests about that. And Professor Allen, the flip side of that is maybe even a personality trait. And I'm going to read from Psychology Online, quote, "A new personality construct has been defined that describes people who persistently see themselves as victims within interpersonal conflicts. The research was published in Personality and Individual Differences." And the study authors and the team described how the social world is saturated with interpersonal transgressions that are often unpleasant and seemingly unwarranted, such as being interrupted when speaking. While some people can easily brush off moments of hurt, others tend to ruminate over them and persistently paint themselves as a victim. And the authors present this feeling of being the victim as a novel personality construct that influences how people make sense of the world around them, end quote. I'm wondering if you heard that, Professor Allen, and what you make of that, given the fact that you know, we've been trying to identify different personality traits for a long time, but if this is sort of baked into us, that's a real challenge. How do you see that?
Yeah, there's an awful lot there, and it's very true. I'm not sure that I've heard from that study in particular, but I've read about other related studies, and in a typical study, they'll measure people's happiness before they come into the laboratory, and then they'll give them a series of tasks to do, and they'll find that they can predict how people react to given situations depending on their initial classification as being happy or not. There is a happy personality, and one of the big characteristics of it is social comparisons. People that are happy tend not to make social comparisons. They tend to be happier within themselves, which is maybe something similar to the mindfulness that Aaron and Alana are talking about. There's also research from evolutionary psychology that our prehistoric ancestors were vulnerable creatures, and a certain amount of anxiety and trepidation were adaptive, so that a certain amount of that kind of thing was baked into our genetic code. So, you know, perhaps we can learn through personal experience to dampen that, but it's there. And, you know, to build on this, I'd also like to say that gratitude and all of this other kinds of stuff is so important. There's such a rich empirical literature showing that gratitude produces happiness. And there's a rich empirical literature about how to extend it to prevent people becoming the jargon is hedonically adapted to it. You know, we get used to it, and it takes more to make us happy. There are ways to fight off that hedonic adaptation. So it's a very real and very important perspective and there is, like I said, a psychology of happiness. And I want to say that I agree with what Aaron said earlier about it's not an either or, it's a both kind of thing. You know, again, I'm a big practitioner and advocate of mindfulness and gratitude and so forth. And that psychology of happiness is very real. On the other hand, though, there's a depoliticization that can happen with this. So, you know, I'm thinking of Bill Bennett's Book of Virtues, Education Secretary for Ronald Reagan, and a conservative political theorist. And his idea is if you just have these virtues, you'll be happy. And it doesn't really matter what's happening around us in the political world. And this sometimes inordinate focus on individuals and their individual happiness, I think, takes away from an emphasis on things that are harder to control, but in a democracy it's possible to control, that have real emphasis on our happiness. So if we are teaching people to be kind, for instance, and we're emphasizing that completely, they're not seeing the importance of income inequality on our happiness. Mm-hmm. They're not seeing the importance of underregulated advertising and materialism on our happiness. And it's, you know, it's both. We need to teach people to be mindful and gracious, gratitude, and so forth. But we also need them to be aware of these larger political kind of things as well, because they're both very important. So, you know, basically what I'm saying is all of the above.
can I follow up on one point there before I turn to Dr.
Sure.
Olden? Just, you know, I certainly take the point that societal and structural inequality makes this conversation, you know, there's a precariousness to this, to treating it like, well, everyone's can wake up and choose happiness. Though I think probably more of us could if we really worked at it.
Yeah, I agree.
But I take that larger point, and I'm really glad you make it. The other thing that you mentioned that I'm a little less clear on is you mentioned underregulated advertising and materialism. Can you just give me a little bit more on that?
Yeah. Thank you for the opportunity. So materialists are people that value things more than they do personal relationships. And so they're inordinately attracted to the fancy car, the fancy house, you know, that kind of thing. And there's all kinds of empirical literature that says that these kinds of people are less happy. And advertising, of course, promotes materialism, and it often promotes materialism in really underhanded kinds of ways and really unfair kinds of ways, I think. And advertisement and materialistic culture make it more difficult, I think, for people to be mindful. So for instance, advertising and materialistic culture teaches people to chase after external rewards. So if I buy this car, the other people on the panel are going to like me and be impressed with me because I have this fancy car. And we're hearing this from all over our culture, that this is the way to be successful. This is the way to be happy. And if I really buy that message, then mindfulness doesn't make any sense to me. You know, why should I crawl inside my head and appreciate the things that I've got and be aware of my own breathing and so forth when everything around me is telling me that I need to pursue these external rewards?
Fair enough. Dr. Olden, I'd love to hear your thoughts on some of this. Go ahead.
Sure. Yeah. I'm thinking about the person that's maybe listening to this broadcast and thinking, boy, these people have it all figured out. They're, you know, they're nothing like me. And, you know, I think what I would say is that many of us are doing this because we struggle with these things daily. You know, I'm an anxious person. I need this in my life to function. And I think what I find is really important for people at this time is to be able to normalize some of what they're feeling, to kind of, like Alana said, it's a sort of one of those tenets of mindfulness where you move toward that thing that you may be avoiding. So in other words, you know, in times of transition like we're experiencing now, on a daily, sometimes an hourly basis, common emotions that people feel are grief and anxiety and fear and loneliness and disappointment. And I try to encourage people that that's where to start. When we can name what we're going through, when we can understand that what we're going through is common to folks that are, you know, we're all experiencing this together in some way. Our experience of it might be different, but we're all going through it. And just simply knowing that what we're feeling is a common experience is a place to start. And I think we can simultaneously feel those things and be resilient and move towards them, but move through them. I love what you said about, you know, suffering being sort of an acknowledgement that things are not as we wish them to be. And, you know, it sort of goes back to what I was touching on earlier, that stress, that, you know, challenges to our well-being is those are common to life. These challenges are always going to be there, and things are not always as we wish them to be. I mean, thank goodness the Bills won last night. That was a great game, and I hope they keep winning. And it's such a great feeling when they do. And so I think, you know, I think again, you know, what I'm suggesting is that we put a name to things. We allow ourselves to process them. We can give them a name. You know, Perd said before, when we name it, we tame it. And so just simply getting that out is the first step. And I would also just say, kind of touch on what was mentioned in the last hour. Gratitude, I am in complete agreement with. You know, holding the door for someone at the coffee shop gives you this sort of rush of, you know, feeling that you're connecting to something, to others, to in a way connecting it. To something that's, you know, maybe greater than us, this sort of feeling of community. And in that vein, you know, I know that for me, it feels really good to support local businesses. And so yeah. I tried, you know, as hard as I can, even though I'm a physician, I try not to eat out, but this is a time in my life where I'm doing a lot of takeout because I love our local restaurants. And, you know, that's one way. For me, you could call it gratitude or sort of altruism, but that's a way that kind of helps me not only feel connected, but to feel that, you know, we're going to get through this.
Well, in our last 3 minutes, I'm going to ask all of you in about a minute or less to offer some final thoughts for listeners who are thinking about the challenges. And I appreciate Dr. Olden's point. Yeah, we are all struggling with something, except for me. No, of course me. And by the way, Dwayne Miller not only was a great person, but the reason I didn't learn much math from him was not him, it was me. And he was right about the surgery. And Dr. Rafael Elatassi is the reason that surgery went well. So there's a lot of things I ended up feeling grateful for instead of feeling the anxiety. So maybe about 45 seconds apiece. Professor Allen, what are you going to be focused on? What do you think people, what can help people as they maybe feel the grimness of the next few months?
Yeah, cling to your social pod, nourish social relationships, and the things that my colleagues are talking about mindfulness and gratitude and kindness and seeing the glass half full are so important. You know, just unbelievably important. And Evan, you know, you said that some people can be happier than they are now, and that, you know, that's absolutely true. We can teach ourselves to be happier, and there's prescriptions for that are empirically validated. Also, I wish that people would think politically and think about the statistics you mentioned about anxiety and happiness, and think about that some of that is related to disconnected social relationships, but some of it is related to economic anxiety that's caused by our political system that needs to be addressed.
Yeah, well said. Dr. Olden, about 45 seconds. Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. I just want to thank you again for having me on, and remind folks that you know, again, we're all going through this together. You're not alone in this. It's common to have all sorts of feelings as we're going through this. And I just encourage people to find what works for them. The last thing anyone needs is for someone to tell them, this is what you need to do. I think each of us are presenting similar but different ways to find presence, to find gratitude, to find a way out of some of the challenges that we're experiencing. And so I just challenge folks to try things out and figure out what works for you on an individual basis.
And Alana, go ahead.
Sure. Engage in an activity that brings you joy. Ideally, a physical activity, whether that be dancing, walking, hiking, skiing, jump roping, something that moves. When we move our body, we get into our body and out of our head, and worry is all the clutter in our head. Mindfulness does not need to be hard. Meditation doesn't have to be weird. It can actually be really fun and interesting and creative.
Well, Alana's new book is Mindfulness, Mantras, and Meditations, 55 Inspirational Practices to Soothe the Body, Mind, and Soul. Wonderful having you, Alana. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you.
Jim Allen's book is The Psychology of Happiness in the Modern World. Appreciate the perspective as always, Professor. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much, Evan.
And Dr. Aaron Olden, owner of Mindful Medicine Rochester. The website one more time so people can learn about what you got coming up, Dr. Olden.
Sure. Thanks again, Evan, for having me. Folks can reach out at mindfulmed.com. I'm happy to speak with folks.
Thanks very much for being with us. Rob Braden, engineer, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson, and I'm grateful for your listenership. And we're going to be back with you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.